Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello, morning.
Good morning.
Oh, Michael, you're online. Yep. Okay, welcome to 3CR, Michael, and Green Left Radio. And
hi.
We've got Jacob, Kieran, and Lalitha on line here. So,
okay. I guess the first question.
No, introduce him. He's
the.
Michael Leach is the head of department at the Arts and Social Sciences at Swinburne University. I go there. I should know. He's an associate professor who specialises in East Timor.
Yeah. So I guess the first question to sort of ask is, you know, for sort of first time listeners, sort of to give the, you know, the background of, you know, politics in East Timor before we can go on to sort of maybe what the recent developments are in that region.
Well, I'm sure your listeners are aware that East Timor was a Portuguese colony for some 400 years and then was occupied by, forcibly occupied by Indonesia from 1975 to 1999 and finally restored its independence in 2002 after a brief period of UN governance. And since that time, you know, has been an independent nation. So, in more recent times, it's obviously had some tensions with its neighbouring country, Australia.
And so, what are the sort of the examples of those tensions between Australia and East Timor?
Well, Australia and East Timor have at times had quite good relations since. 2002, Australia was obviously contributed troops to the Interfet Force, which sort of belatedly supported East Timor's right to self-determination after 24 years of pretty much de facto support for Indonesia's occupation. So a lot of Australians were quite proud of that. Then, of course, Australians are sometimes surprised to learn that we don't have a maritime boundary with Timor-Leste.
Yeah, that's the Timor Gap. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, the Timor Gap. The reason there's a gap there is that in 1972, Australia achieved a pretty favourable outcome with Indonesia, a continental shelf boundary that really favoured Australia in the Timor Sea. The then Portuguese administration, colonial administration, would not agree to the same deal. The Portuguese in 1972 decided that international law was already heading in the direction of a median line position, and they were correct about that. That's where international law was heading. And several years later, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea established that as the kind of norm in international maritime boundary determination. So the Portuguese refused to sign up to this deal. That created the Timor Gap, so the gap between Portuguese Timor and Portuguese Timor and Australia. There was no maritime boundary. Instead, there's been a series of revenue-sharing agreements in that gap, and famously or infamously, one was signed between Gareth Evans and Ali Alatas as they flew over the Timor Gap for a 50-50 deal between Australia and Indonesia, which was a sort of effectively Australia de facto recognition of the illegal occupation of East Timor by Indonesia. After independence, obviously, that had to be renegotiated with the independent state of Timor-Leste, and here we are.
One of the things I've heard about East Timor and its relations with Australia is there's a particular kind of demand in sort of the movement of East Timor, you know, Australia plays a role in stealing East Timor's oil and its resources. And what is sort of elaboration of, you know, the kind of economic relations that occur between East Timor and Australia in relation to, you know, oil?
Well, Professor Quentin Fernandez calls East Timor Australia's largest aid donor, which is quite an amusing way to put it. Grimly amusing, I suppose.
Yes, grim.
Yeah. You're the poorest nation in the
world. Yes.
That's right. Look, in the Joint Petroleum Development Area, Australia makes a lot of the fact that there's a 90-10 revenue split in favour of Timor-Leste, but on a median line boundary, that would be 100% Timor's territory, so not quite as generous as it might appear. then there's the Greater Sunrise Field, which is the subject of recent disputes. Depending on where the lateral or side boundaries are, East Timor claims it would get a lot more of that field as well than it's currently getting, which is about 50-50. But the main objection that they have at the moment is that they're entitled to a... They argue they're entitled to a maritime boundary. The CMATS Treaty of 2006 puts that off, defers that for 50 years. And they argue that at the time that that was signed, they were in a very weak bargaining position. And moreover, in recent times, the allegation has been made that their negotiating team was spied upon from 2004 to 2006. That allegation comes from a former ASIS agent, so it's a fairly credible allegation. And Timor is therefore trying to have that treaty declared void. So they're running a separate action to avoid that treaty. And that's the treaty that puts off the maritime boundary negotiation for 50 years. Now, your listeners might wonder why Timor signed that in the first place. And if you go back to 2004 to 2006, Timor literally has no budget at all. It's entirely reliant on aid from other countries. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there was a lot of pressure on it to get the oil and gas revenues flowing in those fields.
Yeah, that brings me into the next kind of curiosity and question I have is, what is the kind of role that, because I hear a lot about, you know, foreign aid and the kind of foreign aid we give to East Timor, but what is the role that, you know, this foreign aid that Australia gives and in particular NGOs in East Timor, what kind of, you know, contradictory role that they play in, you know, the East Timor region, and does it actually, you know, help? Do these NGOs actually play a positive role or a negative role in terms of self-determination and the helping of people in East Timor?
Well, I guess you'd have to make a judgment on each individual program. I mean, you know, there's critiques out there of Australia's aid program in general, and I guess the main critique of that is that it seems to be a boomerang aid by which those critics are making that point. So these things go out to tender, and then they're tendered for by Australian businesses who get the aid money for providing the services. Now, you know, look, a lot of aid, the aid money that Australia spends in Timor is well spent, in my opinion. You know, you need to look at some really good programs that are run there, but a lot of it is also kind of military, you know, spending when Australia contributed troops, and now some of that provided some stability at important times in Timor's history. But then there's police programs and those sort of things. But there's some very good stuff that Australia does around water, for example, in East Timor. So, you know, it's a question of looking at what aid program is going on and whether and whose interests they support. I think the key thing there is it people-led development, and is it truly enabling people to build capacity? And you have to judge those things program by program, in my opinion.
Yeah, just finishing up quickly, do you have any... sorry, Lali's giving me...
Into the mic.
Sorry, I need to speak into the microphone. Is there anything, a particularly very recent change in the relation regarding the Timor Gap? I understand something's coming up, but I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Yeah. Right now, there's a thing going on called the conciliation. It's a compulsory conciliation. Now, Australia dropped out of the binding dispute resolution jurisdiction of the UN Law of the Sea just before Timor's independence. And they did the same. They dropped out of the same jurisdiction for the International Court of Justice. And basically what that means is Australia said we won't be bound by any international judicial decisions about the maritime boundary. So Australia did that just before the restoration of East Timor's independence. It raises the issue of why they did it then. Mm-hmm. One would suspect they weren't very confident in their position on a continental shelf, which is much closer to East Timor than halfway. So that meant that East Timor couldn't take Australia to the International Court of Justice or any other tribunal and get a binding decision. What they do have left is the right to a compulsory conciliation, and that's going on right now. And that just means that Australia and East Timor have to sit down and discuss the maritime boundary. The Conciliation Commission forms a report. That report must form the basis of good faith negotiations afterwards between Australia and East Timor. However, it's not binding on Australia, so it's not the same as a binding dispute resolution. That process is going on right now in The Hague, and it's the only one that's left open still to Timor-Leste.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Michael, for being available.
You're welcome.
Not feeling well there, I can notice.
It's just the morning I've got my kids running around, actually.
Okay. Thank you anyway, despite your kids running around. That was great.
Yeah, they are.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye. See ya.